Welcome to the Fearless Women Podcast. We're inspiring conversations for the unafraid. I'm Janice McDonald, founder of the Beacon Agency, author, and global champion for women. Why am I making this show? Because I want to share the inspiring stories of women leaders in business, arts and culture, politics, and more with all of you. Hear how they've chosen to go forward and be bold and make the world a better place, even when it wasn't easy to do. Subscribe now wherever you find podcasts. I'm delighted to welcome Karen Grieve Young to the show today. She's helping entrepreneurs succeed in her role as CEO of Futurepreneur Canada. Futurepreneur is the only national nonprofit organization that provides financing, mentoring, and support tools to aspiring business owners aged 18 to 39. Welcome, Karen.
Thanks, Janice. It's delightful to be here with a Futurepreneur board member, no doubt.
And also welcome to our listeners from around the world, including Ireland, Spain, Australia, India, and so many other places. So, Karen, we have a lot to talk about today. So let's get right into it.
Absolutely.
So let's start with fearless. So by definition, not afraid, or at least being bold. So what's the last thing you've done, or just one thing you've done that's really scared you?
Sometimes I find that as you push yourself to do scary things, it's actually something that is quite natural and scary all at the same time. And for me, taking on the role as CEO of this 90-person national organization supporting young entrepreneurs across Canada at Futurepreneur, that's a really big example. Mm-hmm. A little very recent example was la première fois que j'ai fait une présentation tout en français. I gave a presentation all in French a couple of weeks ago for our Futurepreneur Trailblazers celebrating women entrepreneurs in Montreal. And I think it was my first presentation in French in about 25 years. Big example, little example.
How did it go?
My team gave me very kind feedback. There was a warm reception. I think I earned some points by telling the audience, in fact, that it was my first presentation in French. So I got the kindness factor. But I enjoy it. I think reaching out and dusting off old skills and trying new things is part of how we keep growing.
Absolutely. And is there something, do you have a phrase or some kind of an approach that you use to kind of bolster your confidence or kind of muster that courage when faced with a new exciting challenge?
That's interesting. I don't know that I have a phrase. I think I take a couple of deep breaths and just, I often think if I'm not going to do it, who will? Right? And I think the whole concept of imposter syndrome is resonant for a lot of us. And as I've gone through my career and realized that some of the people, particularly some of the women who I admire the most, have imposter syndrome, at least as challenging as mine is, if not more so, and get on with it, inspire me to get on with it.
And so when you talk about imposter syndrome, this idea, like I'm going to get found out.
It's funny, Janice. I think it might not be imposter syndrome as much as there must be someone better at this than I am. I used to be the quintessential example of the woman asked to give a keynote, serve on a panel, deliver remarks, welcome an audience. And my immediate thought would be to go to who is the very best person to sit on this panel, provide these remarks, give this keynote. And I'd often suggest a guy. And be called out for it and be told, actually, we want to hear from you. We asked, and one person really kind of called me out and he said, I asked you for a reason. I want you to be the one presenting. Yes, he has more specific experience. That's not what I'm going for. I'm going for your unique vantage point and experience. And I think remembering that is helpful.
Yeah. And just this whole idea of looking either way and thinking that, yes, maybe I should recommend somebody else. And here you are, amply qualified and very important. We need to hear women's voices, especially women leaders.
Yes, I agree. I think we need to hear women leaders' voices. And I also think we need to hear broader perspectives. I think sometimes when we think who is the person with the most relevant lived experience or the most relevant expertise, we go to the person who might be the most aligned with the traditional viewpoint. And actually, we'll have better discourse, we'll have better discussion, we'll have more rich ideas if we go to the fringes and we don't just ask the usual suspects to give the usual perspective.
Yes, absolutely. Diverse voices, so exactly. Important. So what about the 10-year-old, Karen? What was she like?
At 10, I would have been in my sixth year of ballet. Mm-hmm. I was not very talented at ballet, but I was a klutz. And so I was very grateful to my parents that they kept me in ballet for so long. I think it helped me avoid countless skinned knees along the way. And I did. I dabbled in a lot of things. I tried several instruments for a year. I think even at that young age, I was looking, I kind of had this sense that there was something out there for me. Absolutely no idea what it was, but I was really keen and frankly just in a hurry to find it. And I would get frustrated when I would have friends or see people who seemed either just satisfied doing what they were doing or seemed to have found that thing that made their heart sing really early.
And what about school? What was that like for you at 10? Were you right into it? Was it just something you did so you could hit recess? Like what?
No,
what was Karen
like? That's a really, thinking about it that way, I definitely did not just do it to hit recess. One of my dark confessions is that I never learned to do a cartwheel. And when you're 10 and you're a girl and you can't do a cartwheel, recess is not super fun. And I do remember that very distinctly. So I always cared about school and tried hard. I'll do that same passion thing, though. Mm-hmm. There wasn't one subject that I was passionate about. I just was sort of an elementary school generalist. But yes, I was a good student. I tried hard in class. Back then, there wasn't homework at age 10. And so after school, I read all the time. I read voraciously. I have distinct memories of reading on driving trips and trying to read the page by the street lights and read when the light was there. And then it would go dark and I'd have to make sure I kept my place on the page for when the lights would come back.
So it doesn't surprise me at all that you have a degree in economics from Harvard and an MBA from Stanford.
Yes, I do. And they were incredible experiences. And it's particularly interesting to have gone to those schools right now when people are talking a lot about universities and particularly U.S. universities and the way that admissions works or doesn't work. In my case, when I went to Harvard, I was a recruited athlete. I was not a strong dancer, but I eventually found a sport that required no hand-eye coordination, and I became a pretty intense rower. I was very highly ranked nationally and kind of got there and felt like I'd found my people. I found a lot of other people who also had worked hard and excelled at things that they cared about, also had maybe not quite felt like they fit in until they got there. And just were free to follow and work hard at the things that we cared about. It became not a problem to be smart, care about school. And actually, I shouldn't say that wasn't really a problem in my high school either. But for a lot of people, that was the first time that they got to be their true, authentic self.
Well, I have been on the Women's Leadership Board at Harvard Kennedy School, and every time I'm on campus, it's such a special place. And you did the classic rowing experience, but how was that as a young woman on campus in the 90s?
Oh, it was amazing. The Harvard women's, well, actually, I should say the Radcliffe women's crew team, when Harvard and Radcliffe merged way before I was there, only two sports kept the Radcliffe name, rowing and rugby. And it was extraordinary. We had tons of funding, tons of resources. But it was interesting. I think that was one of the first times that gender did come to play. And it goes with the Harvard Radcliffe thing. Because invariably, each fall, a fresh woman coxswain would come. And a coxswain is, they don't yell row, row, row or stroke, stroke, stroke. They actually guide the boat and encourage the team. And they encourage the rowers to do the very best that they can do. And as your lactic acid is pouring through you, they're really the voice screaming for you to keep pushing your legs down, even though it hurts. Well, invariably, every fall, a new woman coxswain would start. And she, for some reason, would think that the name Harvard was better than the name Radcliffe. Mm-hmm. And we'd be out on the water and she would yell, "You're not Radcliffe, you're Harvard, you're Harvard." And the boat would just grind to a halt because that was not motivating for us. We were very proudly Radcliffe and we spent a lot of time with the men's team that was very proudly Harvard.
And then off to Stanford right after you finished, or was there a break in between?
There was a break. So I was under the delusion when I graduated that if I worked as many hours as possible, I would somehow learn more. So I left Harvard and moved to San Francisco and did sell-side tech M&A in the boom time of the 90s, 95 to 97.
So a crazy, fun,
exciting time to be there.
Yeah.
Crazy adrenaline rushes. Did not close a lot of deals, but pulled an awful lot of all-nighters. And then I left that and did in-house strategy work at The Gap. And in fact, I was at The Gap when Gap.com first launched its online sales. And I remember at the time, this would have been 1997, talking to the woman, rock star, extraordinary woman, former professional tennis player who was launching Gap.com and said to me once in her office, "I'm either going to get promoted because this succeeds, or I'm going to get fired because we prove that no one will buy clothes online." Well, obviously, history is borne out and people will, in fact, buy clothes online.
And everything.
And everything. People will buy everything online. You can buy your coffee online and have it delivered. And so that was a couple of years of that. And then I started at Stanford.
So incredible, though. What a journey.
Yes.
And then after Stanford, you were in London, UK.
I was. So I graduated from Stanford and had an extraordinary academic experience and met a great guy who's now my husband. I was at Bain & Company at the time, hadn't figured out exactly what I wanted to do, so had decided to consult. And so I transferred to London with my husband and started a fresh life together there. It was really fun. My Canadian husband, I'm American by birth.
So you were at Bain, and then what?
So I was at Bain, and my mother's cancer became very clearly terminal. And she was living in Washington, D.C., and I was living in London, and I was working all the time, and something had to give. And so first I went part-time. My mom and I actually started writing a book together about our experience with her cancer called Love You So Much, A Shared Memoir. Do not buy it online. I will send you a copy if you're interested.
Yes, I am interested. So you completed it.
So this, we started in 2003 and I self-published in 2011. She passed away in 2004. So it was an interesting time because I was 2 years out of my MBA and all of a sudden my mom's needs were much bigger than anything else. And so I went part-time to work on the book, realized that part-time in a consulting context while trying to make time for a family member didn't work. Ended up taking a leave of absence that they encouraged me to take rather than resigning. And it was interesting because I had previously signed up to be on the board of a not-for-profit charity that I had no business taking on. I was trying to write a book, working, focusing on my mom, newly married, trying to get pregnant, and on the board of a charity. And then all of a sudden, everything shifted. And I left Bain. And this charity became my lifeline. And the Junior League basically became my full-time role, putting energy there. And I had about 5 years where I wasn't working for pay. And that was weird. It was really hard for me.
And a long time.
It was a long time.
And not part of your plan.
It was not part of the plan. And it was really, I realized how much I'd wrapped my identity in my career. And to some extent, I just swapped that for a volunteer career. But it was very freeing. It was my first experience of really stepping off that prescribed career path and doing something that did not make logical sense. And I will own that I had extraordinary privilege in being able to do this because I had a partner who was making enough money that I could. And a lot of people don't have that choice. And yet we can all make choices in our careers that might not seem logical at the time. I ended up only getting my current role at Futurepreneur and my past role at Mars because I'd had this rich not-for-profit experience, albeit as a volunteer, in addition to my finance and consulting career. But it never made sense at the time. And so I think for me, that curveball was such an important part of who I am. But that's that example of I followed my heart. I knew something had to give. It became clear what it was. But I certainly never would have predicted or guessed that that was a path I would have taken. I just had to be open to it when it came.
What advice would you give to young women starting out in their careers? Because your career has been so fascinating and continues to be.
I believe firmly in serendipity as a job pathing agent, as a career pathing agent. I think, sure, you can start off with a plan, but that plan will only get you so far. Curveballs will strike. You'll meet people. You'll either have amazing things happen. You'll have challenging things happen. And you need to follow those signals. And sometimes those signals might seem in the short term to take you off your path. But in the long term, if you think, you know, life is a marathon, it's not a sprint. It's almost like a series of a lot of sprints as part mm-hmm. of a marathon. What I've found is that when I follow my heart, even when it's telling me to do something really counterintuitive, it works out in the end, even if it doesn't seem like it at the beginning. And I say that, and I'm going to pause for a second, because I remember sitting in the classrooms at Stanford, hearing entrepreneur after entrepreneur say, I just followed my heart. I just did what I wanted to do. And I followed my dreams and my passion, and it all worked out. And I remember sitting there thinking, what are my dreams? What are my passions? I don't know what this is for me.
You weren't skeptical.
I wasn't skeptical. I was frustrated because I didn't know what that meant for me. You know, and Bain is a great firm. They were fantastic to me when I was a consultant with them. But that wasn't what I wanted to do.
And the gold standard. Like
they're a brilliant place. And talk about a place that was flexible. They transferred me or let me transfer twice. And then when I had life circumstances come in, I went part-time and then took a leave of absence. And then they said, you can come back anytime. They were extraordinary. But I bring them up because I didn't know what I wanted to do, and that's why I went there. And I think we can feel pressure that we're supposed to know before we're ready to know. Mm-hmm. Or it's supposed to be like this lightning bolt. And I think sometimes it's more subtle than that.
Yeah, it can just kind of grow.
Absolutely. It can be a lot of little signals. Mm-hmm. And then if you pick your head up, you realize that they're telling you something.
There seems to be a lot of pressure that I've heard from young people on campus today feeling like they need to know the direct link between what they're studying and what their career path is. Yeah. And I love that you're reminding people how serendipity actually can be really important in your career.
Absolutely. In fact, the best analyst in my investment banking class was, he was, I think, a philosophy major from Yale. He was not necessarily a math guy, but he brought a fresh perspective because of that. I'm a huge believer in liberal arts education. And I'm also a huge believer in the skilled trades for people who actually do know early what they want. Go ahead and do it. You don't need to get a 4-year university degree if you know what you want and that's not it. But if you do want to do that and you want to just indulge in having this experience and testing a lot of different ideas, I love the idea of being able to do that also.
So I get a chance to see you around the boardroom table and as CEO of Futurepreneur. Why did you take on this role? You're clearly passionate about it. So what was it about the opportunity to lead Futurepreneur that was most exciting to you?
There are a couple of different aspects of it. I love leading teams. I love being part of a team and I love empowering teams. And I had a team of about 50 when I was at Mars before joining Futurepreneur. And I started realizing that maybe not quite enough women are raising their hands to be CEOs. And I'm someone who actually likes leading. And
you're good at it.
Well, that's
come on
kind
now.
Of
you are.
No, I really enjoy a lot of aspects of it. And the parts that are challenging to me are opportunities for me to grow and improve. And so part of it was that I figured, and maybe this is a woman thing, I'm 46. I took the role when I was 45. And I felt like I was in that window where I was maybe old enough to be taken seriously, but not so old that people would assume that I decided not to take that path. So I did feel a little bit of time pressure that if I'm going to try to be a CEO, now is the time. However, that's only part of the story. The biggest part of the story is what Futurepreneur does. I think it's vitally important that Canada help our top companies, many of which are science and tech driven, grow and scale globally. And that's what I had been helping to do at Mars for the prior 7 years. I also believe fervently that we have to drive Main Street businesses in every Main Street across Canada. Some of them will grow and scale and export, and you've done a lot of work with the BDC, our great partners on that. Some of them will stay smaller. And we're speaking now from the studio of Pop Up Podcasting, which is a Futurepreneur client. JP is sitting in the studio with us as we speak. And what I love about what Futurepreneur does is it helps a great breadth of Main Street businesses, vibrant Main Street businesses, start, grow, become the fabric of their communities, create jobs, create inclusive social prosperity. And so I wanted to be part of that story. And when I realized that not only was there a CEO role that could be interesting to me, but that it was this much of a passion of mine, I left it the opportunity.
And we're the lucky beneficiaries. And so are the, you know, thousands of entrepreneurs that you help right across the country. So as an entrepreneur myself, I'm very excited to be a board director with Futurepreneur. What would you tell somebody who's thinking about starting a business?
To call us. Call us, check out our website, come to one of our events. If you go to our website, Futurepreneur, future without an E, it's bilingual, futurepreneur.ca. Then we have an online business plan writer. We have a business resource center, and you can learn a lot about what taking that leap might be. And then if you inquire about the possibility of doing our startup program, then you'll have a member of our team contact you to walk you through what it would be to apply to get our collateral free loan financing, to get a mentor to help you start, and to get the tools and insights you need. And the important thing about that model is that we provide up to $20,000 in financing, and the BDC will match 2-to-1 to make it up to $60,000 in financing total.
So money and mentorship, everything you need to know, just go to the website, futurepreneur.ca.
And come to one of our events. We're in 16 locations across Canada. We've supported entrepreneurs in every province and territory, and you could be next. Not you, Janice, but one of our listeners could
somebody
be next.
Else could
somebody
be next.
Else could
Absolutely.
Be next.
We're so lucky to have you as the champion of entrepreneurs right across Canada. And so thank you for that work. Tell me this. What are you reading right now? I know you talked about the 10-year-old you was an avid reader. Is there time in your life still for reading? Has that passion continued?
So the sad thing is I am now the least read person in my family. Everyone else seems to find more time for it than I do. So it takes me a long time to get through books, so I choose them very carefully. I just finished Mindset by Carol Dweck.
Great book.
And it's such a great book. And it really, the whole idea that we all may have fixed mindset tendencies in some parts of our lives, and we can overcome them, and we can adopt a growth mindset so that we can continually improve and challenge ourselves. I loved it.
In our BDC boot camps, we talk to women entrepreneurs about the importance of a growth mindset and look for that when you're hiring as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
You know, that you want people that are thinking in that way. A fixed mindset can be really challenging for, especially if you have big aspirations for your company.
Absolutely. And then the other one that I'm reading right now, which was recommended by one of my colleagues at Futurepreneur, is How Will You Measure Your Life by Clay Christensen.
Somebody else just mentioned that one too. That's very powerful.
It's really powerful.
A Harvard prof and big thinker.
Mm-hmm. Big thinker and an extraordinary leader who's done really big things. And what I was speaking about earlier, he actually talks about in his book in terms of you may have the path, your deliberate path that you're on. And if you keep yourself open to those other opportunities that will come up, you will have that much richer experience. Just being open to those signals that come along the way. But the thing that is the most resonant is that we really have to focus our time and our energy on what we care about. And as a CEO, it's so easy to think that the other things we care about will always be there. you know, to think that your most trusted employees know that you value them, and even more so to think that your life partner and your kids know that, of course, they're the most important people to you as you fly off to one of the other locations where your organization works. So for me, it's really helped me remember. I'm constantly reminding myself that being present and making time for the most important people is the most important thing I do.
Mm-hmm. And so we heard about how competitive sports have been really important in your life, but what about now? How do you unwind now? I know it's not reading now.
It's not typically reading. I think so I'm a morning person, and there are three things that I do most mornings, and I don't do them for long, but they're critical parts of my morning. I exercise most mornings. For me, training is all about clearing my mind, staying relatively fit, and not getting injured. I went through a spate of injuries in my 20s, so those are kind of my priorities. And I give myself permission to take the attitude that doing anything is better than doing nothing. So if I have half an hour, amazing. For me now, that's a long workout. If I only have 10 minutes, I will work out for 10 minutes because it's better than not doing anything.
Right.
And then I go upstairs and I work. I'll catch up before the day starts. I'll start that work by journaling. Again, it might be 10 lines, but I'll write something that I'm grateful for, some thoughts that are on my mind, and the couple of things that I'm definitely going to get done that day. And then I'll do whatever work I have time to do. And then before I wake up my kids and we start the getting ready for school dash, I get my Muse headset out and I use my Muse headset for 5 minutes and I just take quiet meditation time. So all told, that might be 20 minutes or it might be 40 minutes in any given day. But giving myself permission to give myself that time sets me up in a better state for the day.
It's amazing. It's both the rigor of the regularity, but the flexibility that it'll fit in how it needs to.
Exactly. And some of it's giving yourself permission that today's not the day. Sometimes I'll actually write on my list, day off. I'm not working out today, but I explicitly give myself permission to call this a day off.
Which is smart, because otherwise you spend the whole day feeling guilty that you didn't do
completely.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great advice.
I mean, I've been working out for more than 30 years. The Muse is newer for me, maybe 4 years. And I didn't start journaling until last summer.
No, this is new.
Yeah, okay. It's new.
What's changed because you're journaling, if anything?
I'm more deliberate about how I spend my time. And I think this is really important for the CEO, me. It is lonelier. I have to do more of my own thinking, obviously talking to other people, but it gives me that chance to reflect and pause. And again, be deliberate about how I'm feeling. Sometimes I'll put the really hard stuff in there. Sometimes I'll put the stuff that I'm really excited about, but I can't necessarily share quite yet. But yeah, it helps me focus.
That's amazing. So, final question. What, Karen, is your dream for Canada?
I think our big opportunity is to double down on what makes us great. It's the inclusiveness that is exhibited in so much of what we do and the way that we think and the way that we treat people. So it's absolutely economic and societal prosperity. It's really achieving that prosperity and in an inclusive way. And that's why I'm so passionate about what we do and why this is what I'm so excited to be doing right now. I love that not only do we work with a whole breadth of entrepreneurs, but some of these entrepreneurs would not have had a chance without our support, our financing, because they don't have equity, because the whole concept of angel financing is just laughable to them. They don't know anyone who has enough money to be an angel for them in that way. What I love is that that's not unusual. I think so many Canadian leaders also dream of this inclusive social economic prosperity for Canada, and that's why it can actually happen. Because we all believe it and because we're investing in that direction.
That's a beautiful dream for Canada. Thank you. Karen Grieve-Young, it has been such a delight to have you today on the Fearless Women podcast, CEO of Futurepreneur Canada, and making change for so many entrepreneurs in our country. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me, Janice.
Thanks for listening. We want our community to grow. Tell your friends, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for our newsletter at fearlesswomenpodcast.com to get the early scoop. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts or in your favorite app. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star rating. I'm Janice McDonald. Stay fearless. Thank you to the 30% Club Canada for your support of the Fearless Women Podcast. The 30% Club believes that gender balance on boards and in senior management not only encourages better leadership and governance, but diversity further contributes to better all-around board performance and ultimately increased corporate performance for both companies and their shareholders. Want to learn more? Visit their website, 30%club.org, and select the Canada chapter to find out about membership, supporters, and key resources. Thank you to BDC, the bank devoted exclusively to entrepreneurs, for your support of the Fearless Women Podcast. We love smart companies that want to amplify women's voices. For more information, go to bdc.ca/women.